subtle stylings of Fat Trout Trailer Park here, leading us into Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us. Hello, Eric.
Yes, sir. I'm a fat trouter. Heck yes. Been one since today.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. So just to, I'm sure I've said this before, but just to let people in on my my little world, how the sausage is made, every morning when I see Rich or Carrie or whomever posts on Facebook that I'll be appearing today, I usually see the gentleman who follows me, I see his sort of ruffled hair and visage, and I'm like, oh my God, that means I'm on the radio today. And then so I immediately go to Spotify, and I try to think up some sort of keyword for what we'll be discussing that day, see what pops up, you know, just kind of fun stuff. And so today we're talking about what I call the Tempranillo belt. And so I looked up the word belt, and that led me to that. And there you have it.
I like it.
Do you? It's okay. It's better than some of the other stuff I found, which tells you what else is out there, I guess.
Well, what I like is the effort to establish that connection. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, people need to see behind the curtain and the short little man who's screaming into the microphone. I don't feel short, but when you're talking about Bill Russell right before me, I definitely feel short.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, we're talking, this is the segment we do every year, the Tempranillo belt, the Frenchianization of Spain. This is, you know, it came up even the other day in my store, how Tempranillo, despite the fact that I always kind of have this joke of, you know, if Americans can pronounce it, they will indeed order it. And if they can't, they will not. They won't ask for it. They're afraid. It's like, I don't want to seem foolish, which is too bad because there's an awful lot of fun stuff out there that maybe you haven't been exposed to and you're missing out. So Tempranillo, again, is one of these grapes, you know, I would assume people would refer to it as Tempranillo or stuff like that, like sarsaparilla. But indeed, Tempranillo. And the reason that it's everywhere in Spain, though it isn't, and we'll sort of talk about that today, but the reason it's sort of everywhere that Americans know is because it has a much quicker ripening cycle than a lot of the other grapes that you know and love from the, you know, the Spanish grapes that we've been talking about, the sort of more international noble varieties like Cab, etc. But indeed, Spain, even 100, 150 years ago, had a lot more varieties around. And what basically they did was they ripped up a lot of those other grapes in favor of the Tempranillo grape because it ripened. And it was like, cool, well, we don't have to worry about ripening because this one will. And to remind everybody, Spain is the second highest in terms of elevation country in Europe, second only to Switzerland. That's obviously not to say that there aren't, you know, places near the ocean, et cetera, that are low. But the entire, you know, sort of growing region where you see this Tempranillo is fairly elevated. It is cool. It's not exactly what you'd picture for, you know, a more southerly, closer to the equator, region than some others. So just something to keep in mind there. Now, when I say the Frenchianization, what we're talking about today, this Tempranillo belt, is this more like a bandolier, like you'd see, with bullets in it or something like that. It sweeps from the shoulder, up in the area where you have the regions of Rioja and Navarra, basically directly south of, how last week we were talking about the passage in Catalonia between France and Spain, where the Pyrenees sort of peter out and you get to the coastline there. Well, on the other side of the Pyrenees, in Basque country, you have another place where the Pyrenees kind of come into the foothills and slowly become coastline. literally directly south of that, you have these regions of Navarra and Rioja. So imagine that sort of the shoulder where the Bandolier is sitting. And then just below that, you have the beginning of the Duero or Douro River, depending on if you're in Spain or Portugal. And it sort of sweeps along that and goes out eventually through the city of Porto. And then a little south of that, almost like the sash coming off of the Bandolier, you do have some other outcroppings of Tempranillo. So we'll talk about this today. But what happened was that our good friend, the Phylloxera laus, that was brought over from North America, just to remind everybody on botanical clippings, in the 1800s, started munching on the vines of all of Europe, really. But Western Europe was pretty much cleared out of vines between 1850 and 1870. 99% of their vineyards were destroyed. When this started happening in France, especially in the Bordeaux region where there was, and you know, southern France where there was a lot of use of barrel aging, of blending of grapes. Those folks fled north and south, but the folks who fled south fled through that little gap and went south into places like Navarra and like Rioja, where they discovered other grapes that they thought were really interesting. As well as, you know, in some places like Navarra and others, they introduced some of their Cab and Merlot, stuff like that. But it is into these regions where you now, even up till today, see the fabulous barrel aging and also now blending. Because as I said, they did rip out a lot of those other cool varietals, but now there's a real big resurgence in the more interesting varieties that you would find in Rioja, for instance, like Maturara Tinta, Graciano, and so you're starting to see these, especially Graciano, which is it's like Petit Verdot and Petit Syrah. It adds sort of like a blueberry note to things. So you'll start to see that, and then as you go down the Duero River, you do see more sort of solely Tempranillo, although they don't call it Tempranillo. They'll call it, you know, whatever clone it is. So in the region of Ribera del Duero, it's called Tinta del País, which is the red grape of the country. In Toro, it's called Tinta del Toro, right? So the red grape of Toro. And then you get into, you cross that river into Portugal, you cross the border into Portugal and into the famous terraced vineyards that supply port. So it's sort of, you know, as we've talked about over and over and over, grapes mutate, they mutate, they get into a new region, it's slightly different, they will adapt themselves to that region and therefore become a little different. So it is kind of legit to think of them as a little different in all those regions. If you drop south, there's a couple places that I should also mention. The one I suppose that's most important and that we actually sell a lot of wine from at the store is the area around Madrid. So Madrid is sort of an immense plateau on this, in this high plateau. If you've ever flown into Madrid and then sort of driven out of it, you'll see, you know, vast fields of what we call cereals, right, which is grains. But you will also, especially in the mountains north of Madrid and south of Madrid and west of Madrid, you'll see these really ancient plantings of things, amongst which are also Tempranillo. But it is sort of at this area where you start to see, so about two-thirds of the way down the Spanish Peninsula, the Iberian Peninsula, Spain changes drastically. They also, like culturally, the identity changes drastically. And that is where you do start to see warmer weather, the elevation start to drop a little bit, and that's where you start to see the grapes that do have longer ripening seasons, that do have maybe slightly thicker skins, that are more accustomed to heat. We'll talk a little bit more about that area perhaps next week, where you are getting into the areas of Valencia, Murcia, Umia, and you start to see the grape Monastrell, which is, you know, the French Morved, take over, and other things like that. So that's really, you know, where that sash ends. But the other place that you do see Tempranillo is in Extremadura, which is due east of Lisbon, so fairly far down in Spain on that sort of downward slope, but still high enough where they do grow some very, very good Tempranillo. So yeah, that's sort of the general idea of what happened is that you had these native varietals that were fairly interesting and people were thinking things through. But then once the French came down, and even today, there's heavy investment from the French in this area. It's very valuable. A lot of Bordeaux families, the rich banking families, have places in, for instance, Rioja, Navarra. So there's a lot of cross-pollinization even today. And it makes for really, really excellent wine. So I do encourage people to check those things out. I'm sure I'm basically out of time. So just want to remind everybody, we're still mask optional in the store, but please do feel comfortable doing it. We're starting to do it ourselves if there's any concern. Obviously, we want to continue to do the right thing health-wise. And if monkeypox becomes a thing, and I hope it doesn't, we'll deal with that then, too. In the meantime, cheers.
Thank you, Eric. Hope your week goes well.
Ditto for you, gentlemen. Oh, and happy anniversary to my folks. 50 years strong.
Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
I've been there for 44 of them, so I must have done something right, which is baffling.
No, I think you were the key. There's no question.
I must be. I'm the golden boy.
That's
all right. Good to talk to you guys.
See you, Eric.
Later.
Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle every Tuesday right here on Downtown. Stop in and see Eric, Morgan, the crew, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor.